What is up, Strides for Strength fam? I am Michaela.
And I'm Erin, and we're RSCA certified run coaches and the founders of Strides for Strength Run Coaching. We are here to help you build belief in yourself as an athlete on the run and beyond.
The Strides for Strength podcast is running meets everyday life. We focus on mindset, physical strength, and all of life's in-between moments of self-doubt and fear, both on and off the run.
Our mission is to make running simple and fun while we pull back the curtains around all things running with athlete interviews, guest experts, combined with our many years of running experience, going from non-runners to now multiple time marathoners to help you become the athlete you were always meant to be.
What is up, Strides for Strength fam? We have our very favorite, yours truly, Erin, here today to chat all things her marathon weekend. I don't want to spill the beans. I'll let her spill the beans. So, like, tell us what you did, you know?
Beans were spilled a long time ago. So I qualified for the Boston Marathon this weekend. No big deal, but yay.
Also, like, it is a huge fucking deal, okay? Let's just, like, get into it. But we are so proud of you. So excited. It was literally the most frustrating thing to not be able to track you. I was like, is she okay? Is she running? I don't know. Like, you were on the map for a little bit, and then you weren't. And how annoying was it for people to be blowing you up when you were like, I can't do anything about this?
People texting me at like mile 7 and they were like, I can't track you. It shows that you're not online for some reason, like ... And I had my AirPods in, so it was reading them to me. And I was like, I'm kind of busy right now. So like, I don't think I can help you. Maybe you should like call the IT guy or something for this. Like, not me. I'm not it. So that was a little frustrating, but it's also kind of cute to like see how many people are tracking you and how many people care about you and stuff like that. So
it also made me realize though, like how dependent we come on tracking people on like race day versus like letting them just like go out there and do their thing. Like we, you know, I think it's cool like to have that camaraderie and to like be able to be like a sort of part of race day from a distance. But also it was like, she's crushing it, I'm sure. But like, yeah, she's doing it to the beat of her own drum. And you kind of like, you know, I think about Houston when people were tracking me and like the outpour of like, you're at mile 20, you're at mile 21. And I was like, I have no idea what mile you're at, but keep going, pal.
Luckily, a lot of people have me on Find My Friends. And I guess they like knew kind of an idea of what the course looked like. And so they're like, I know that you're over halfway done, so keep going.
I'm like trying to do pace math in my head. I'm like, okay, I know the race started at this time. She's probably about this pace. This is probably where she's at.
Your pace math is actually, I will give you a lot of credit for that. Your pace math is very on point, because I think you text me and you're like, I think you should have like 3 miles to go or like 4 miles or something like that. And I was right exactly where you texted me and thought that I was. So
bingo.
Odd talents that you need to add to your resume.
Honestly, though, the people who like were tracking you on Find My Friends, so smart. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. Let's get into like the good stuff. Let's get into the meat and potatoes. You have shared here a lot on the podcast about your running journey and just kind of like the evolution of yourself as a runner. So maybe just give like the quick and dirty version of your journey in case somebody's like, this is their first episode or they aren't sure who you are. Like, who is Coach Erin? When did she start running? Why did she start running? Was Boston always the dream? Everything.
Yeah. So I was not always a runner. I tried out for track in high school, and I say this all the time on this podcast, but I tried out for track in high school and I did not make it. And I wish my track coach could see me now, because I bet he's never qualified for Boston. I digress. I'm still bitter about it, but, yeah, I tried out for track in high school. I wasn't like a huge runner. I just was like, I need something to do before volleyball season. So that was the sport that I attempted to go out and try out for. Never ran in college. I remember, it's funny, I remember this girl that I didn't actually know. I just knew of her, and she was like a really big runner. And I remember watching her do like half marathons, and she would like run them really fast. And I was like, wow, I want to be like that, but I'm never going to be like that, because I'm never going to be a runner. Yay. Yeah, never ran in college. And then I met my now husband, and we ran the Peachtree Road Race, I guess 8 years ago. I think this will be year number 8 for us. So did a 10K. That was my first race ever. And then I was like, wow, I wonder if I can do a half marathon. And then I signed up for a half marathon, and I was like, wow, I'm going to do a marathon. And did the marathon. And then finished my first marathon in 4 hours and 32 minutes. And I knew then I was going to qualify for Boston one day.
Let's unpack that, because I feel as if a lot of, especially people who are running their first marathon, or maybe they've ran a couple of marathons and their current PR or their latest time feels really far out of reach from like their age group specific Boston qualifying time. How did you like bridge that gap both mentally and physically?
It wasn't easy. And I was actually having a conversation with someone on Instagram, probably like Thursday or Friday before the race. And she was kind of in the same boat that I was in whenever I ran a 4:32. And it was multiple failed attempts. Like, let's start there. That was marathon number one. Mm-hmm. This past weekend was marathon number seven. So, I mean, this was six attempts to get there. And actually my slowest marathon was the marathon before this one. So it's not linear. But I was actually having a conversation with her and she was like, I want to track you this week and I want to follow like your weekend, but I just have a really hard time because I want to qualify for Boston one day, but like seeing all these people running Boston, like chasing this big dream is a little hard. And it's like, that's a valid feeling too. And I was like, in the past, I've deleted my Instagram on Boston weekends because I was like, it didn't serve me in that moment because I wasn't there. I wasn't ready. I knew it would happen, but I needed to take a step back in that moment and focus on what I needed.
Yeah. I think that's so important. Like that level of self-awareness of like what drains you or what makes you compare or what, you know, makes you feel less than. I think a lot of people in like a social media driven world, we get so stuck in the consumption of what everybody else is doing. We think that our journey should look like theirs. And I think what you said there about like, this was the seventh attempt and it's not linear with New York City Marathon being, that was your last marathon that you ran in November of 2022. Is that what year we ran it?
Yeah. And it was almost 5 hours.
Right. So, you know, we see the BQ times, we don't see all of the work that goes into it. So what specifically do you feel like you did this training cycle? And even between now and New York City, which was your slowest marathon, almost 5 hours, attempt number six, and running a 3:29, 3:29:22,
baby.
Thank you. I was like 3:29 something. What was the work that happened between now and then?
Yeah, I honestly, looking back on it, New York completely killed me. Like, I was so done after New York, just mentally, physically. And granted, I will say that I did run Berlin a month before and I did run a PR in Berlin. So like, let's not take that out of the equation. Like, I know that has something to do with it, but I just put too much on my plate at once. And it wasn't entirely my fault. COVID kind of threw things for a loop and I had to run New York when I had to run New York. So, you know, it is what it is. Life happens. You have roll the punches. But I forgot your question.
What does the work look like between now? Between running a 4:30 and a 3:29:32.
The work. Okay. So yeah, New York completely killed me. But I took a step back after New York and I was like, okay, what do I need to do to get to where I want to be? And I knew I needed to take a break from the marathon. I knew it wasn't serving me in that moment. So I decided to focus on the 5K because I truly never raced a 5K. Probably within like 3 years because I was so focused, like hyper-focused on the marathon. So I ran a couple 5Ks in the spring and just kind of like see where my fitness was at. And then really started training for a 5K over the summer, which training in the summer in Atlanta is very helpful because it's really hot and humid. And then went to Chicago, ran a fast 5K, and then decided that I really wanted to move that over into the half marathon because I could tell that I had this like new level of fitness that I had unlocked because I really focused on strength and just like running fast and my nutrition and like everything that I couldn't focus 100% on in the off or in the marathon season. So I switched it to the half marathon, ran a half marathon PR in November, ran another half marathon PR in January. And then that's when I started training for Carmel.
I love that. And I want to backpedal a little bit. Something you just said, like taking a break from the marathon distance to focus on the things that you can't necessarily focus on when you're in a marathon training cycle. Tell us more about that. Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. it is just running in general, just training for a marathon takes up so much time and it takes up so much energy. And you're also trying to like life on top of that. Mm-hmm. So I have found that I can't focus on lifting really heavy and lifting, you know, 3-4 days a week while marathon training. So I used that time when I wasn't marathon training and I was running a little bit lower mileage and I had a little bit more pep in my step, if you will, to really lift heavy shit. And I would just go to the gym and I would do hella squats and deadlifts and like pick up heavy things. And I wasn't scared of doing that. And then just really like honing in on the nutrition. I started counting macros for a little bit just because I was interested to see how much I was eating and what I was eating, because it's easy to just pick something up and be like, oh, this yogurt's healthy. And it's like, but it is it what you need? Like, is it what you need in that moment? So I really focused on that and kind of like learned a lot about food and what I was eating and crossed my fingers that that would help me in the marathon.
And it did. Look at you now. A Boston qualifier. Oh, and I think too, like one of the coolest things about coaches is that when we take those step backs and we zoom out on the bigger picture and we start to dial in on these things and we find our edge, we then get to help our athletes do that too. And I think it's really cool. Like even this weekend when you were running and afterwards, like I feel like there was so much hype and energy in the air of the group chat and just like a fire in people's butts who are running Pittsburgh coming up in May at our retreat. And it's so cool because it's like by you taking the time to pour into those things and learn more about those things, you also become a more well-versed coach and you get to pay that forward to your athletes, which I think is really, really huge. And it's like, you could have very easily after New York City been like, nope, I need to redeem myself. Like I'm going to go sign up for another marathon and I'm going to get back to it. But it's like, that wasn't what you needed. And so being able to take that time off and now looking at the PR after PR and the growth, like all the growth, it's like, you have to have that space and that time sometimes. And I think people get so race obsessed and like finish line obsessed that they forget that the off season is actually where the magic happens, not mm-hmm. necessarily just the training cycle. But maybe like a little pep talk type message for the person who's thinking like one day. And I feel like you had shared that in your reel, kind of, you know, when you were thinking about your 4:30 marathon, you're like, one day I'm going to run Boston. And for the person who's feeling like a little bit discouraged or like it's too far away, it's not possible for them, what would you say to them?
Oh man, that's a hard question because I would say so much to them. First off, like I said, it's not linear. So if you do have a bad race, like it is not the end of the world. It is okay. Like you can come back and you can run faster than the time you did before that. So take those setbacks and really just look at what you need in those moments. I think that that was a really big, really big game changer. Because like you said, I could have just kept, you know, pushing in the marathon and pushing the marathon, seeing how fast I could get. But I really don't feel like I would have made any progress. So really just keep going. I know that sounds so cliche, but just like, just keep going. Just keep doing it. Just keep trying. Like you'll get there eventually. I don't know. It's, I always told myself it wasn't if, but when. And I think that that was a really big thing that I held on to because I knew it would happen one day. Like I didn't know if I was going to be 60 years old and be in like the oldest age bracket that you could be in to qualify for Boston, but I knew that I was going to do it. Mm-hmm. So find that mantra, find that drive and just keep going.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds silly, but it's like so true. And, you know, when you look at like the timeline of things, like a lot of times people just like want it now or they want the next race, the next training cycle. It's like the marathon distance owes you nothing, my friend. So like just keep showing up and putting yourself out there and putting in the reps and the work. And I feel like something which you can talk a little bit about, like this training cycle, like you kind of kept to yourself, like you just like head down and you were grinding. So tell us a little bit about what this training cycle looked like, what kind of mileage, strength training, nutrition, what was different this training cycle compared to other ones?
I will say I did run higher mileage this training cycle, like way higher mileage than I've ran in the past. And I also feel like it was kind of nice to have someone who was in my corner that really believed that I could do it. And I had just met, I work with, my coach's name is Nicole. She's great. She's amazing. And I went to her and I was like, I know you don't know me, but my name is Erin. I'm going to qualify for Boston and I want to run this mileage. And she was like, wow, you're aggressive. And I was like, yeah, that's me. Sorry. And she was like, okay, cool. That's fine. Let's do it. And so she like truly believed that I could do it. So being able to have someone in my corner that believed in me and believed that I could run 60 plus miles a week. I think I got up to 62 for my peak week. Was really helpful. So I did higher mileage. I kept going to the gym. So I did my strength training in the gym doing like heavier weights, but I cut back compared to what I was doing when I was like 5K, 10K training. Mm-hmm. So I dropped down to like 2 days a week just because 3 days seemed like a lot when I was running 60 miles a week. Focused on speed work. So I had a short speed midweek, and then I would do like tempo work on the weekends for my long runs. And I think you also said this too, but it was whenever you ran your race in January, but it was super helpful to have those fast finish long runs. Like those 3, 4, 5 miles fast finishes, holy cow. Like when you're doing an 18-mile long run and you're supposed to run, you know, a 7-minute pace for the last like 2 miles, you're like, oh, this isn't unfamiliar. This doesn't feel good. So you get to the race and you're like, okay, this, I know what to do.
That's what we're doing. Yeah. The body knows.
Yeah.
And I think something, and you and I had talked a lot about this when you were training and as you were increasing like your volume and your mileage of, you know, how different it felt and also like why that isn't for everybody. So can we talk a little bit about like why you wanted the higher volume and is that a direct correlation to success or the lack thereof for somebody who's listening?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You can 1000% qualify for Boston running lower mileage. Everybody is different. Mm-hmm. So thanks for pointing that out. But I looked back at my training, my personal training, and I saw what I was running. And everyone knock on wood, but like I've never had a big injury. I had a high ankle sprain because I stepped in a pothole like 4 years ago. So like I'm not injury prone, knock on wood. I knew I had the time at the moment to really dedicate to running higher mileage. And so that's why I kind of felt like now was the time to do it. But no, you absolutely do not have to run high mileage to run a fast marathon. It really is, look at your life. Like, what are you doing in this moment? Do you have a lot of life things going on at the moment that you feel like you can't dedicate X amount of time to running? Cool. You don't have to do 60 miles. Maybe peak at 40, you know, like it's, everyone's different. Everyone's going to respond different. If you're injury prone, higher mileage may not be for you and that's okay. Boston is still an option.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting too to just like hear from your perspective because I personally am somebody who historically I haven't done well with like higher volume and higher mileage because of like my work schedule and when I was working full time and you know all of these things. And so it's like everybody's life demands are different, but it was interesting to hear how like you were responding and adapting and like how good you felt the entire training cycle. It wasn't like, oh, I'm feeling burnt out, like I'm exhausted. So how did you maintain that higher mileage and like momentum and joy for running? Because what I see a lot of runners do is like they overcommit in the mileage and then they're like, well, this fucking sucks.
Yeah. No, that's fair. First off, number one, I was very tired. Like, let's start there. I was so tired. But I did not get burnt out and I knew the signs to look for when I was getting burnt out. So just like, I told myself before I started, I was like, if you ever get to that point where you're dreading your runs and you just like don't want to get out the door for multiple runs in a row, then it's time to take a step back. Like, sure, you can have one off day where you're like, I just don't want to go. But then you force yourself to get out the door. But whenever it starts happening over and over and over again, that's when you need to take a step back. So I told myself before I started that if I had that feeling that I was going to take a step back and it actually worked out well because I only missed one run, which I don't think is something to like, you know, run around and like parade about because it's okay to miss runs, but you know, I only missed one. So I did pretty okay.
But, yeah, for yeah. sure. Yeah. And it, like you said, it's like okay to miss runs, but it's also like, are you saying you want something but not backing it up with action? I think a lot of times people are like, oh, I want to qualify for Boston one day, but are not putting in the work, like not putting their money where their mouth is in terms of like actually showing up and doing the work. So yeah. it's like, do your actions match your desires? And if not, like self-assess and redirect to yourself. Yeah. I love you, bud.
Right, exactly. And like, not that it, not that you can't do it, but just like, maybe do we need to pull it back and like set your goal, you know, X number this time, and then reach for the next goal the next time, you know, stepping stones, baby. We love them.
We love stepping stones. Okay. Let's dive into race day. Enough chat about the training cycle and the build. Let's talk about race day. And yeah, so tell us what marathon you ran and why you chose it.
Okay, so I ran the Carmel Marathon in Indiana, not California, because if I had a dollar for every person that was like, oh my God, California is beautiful, I would be rich and I could quit my job. It was in Indiana. So yeah, that was a weird choice. I knew I wanted to run Houston with you, and I knew I wanted to run a late spring marathon because I wanted to be able to take a full week off after Houston. So I literally Googled flat, fast marathons in April. and I found the Carmel Marathon in Indiana and chose that one.
I love that. What? So actually I was really surprised when you said Indiana and a flat, fast course, because you're usually like a hill girly. So let's talk a little bit about like designing or picking a race course to support your race goals.
It's funny you ask that, because whoever created this website for Carmel Indiana Marathon lied, because that was the most rolling hills course I've ever ran. Like, it was great rolling hills, which was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And halfway through, I was like, wow, I would hate if this was pancake flat, I think. But I actually did think of that halfway through. I was like, I don't enjoy flat courses, so I don't know why this is what I chose. But it ended up working out in my favor. But I do train in Atlanta. So I train, I think my weekly average was like 1,300 roughly was like my average of my elevation gain each week. So like I run on a hilly course pretty frequently. And I've just always been decent on hills. So looking back, I probably would have Googled a rolling hill course in April, but it worked out in my favor and Carmel lied. So
Carmel lied. Noted. I was like thinking about that the whole race morning. I was like, Erin doesn't even like flat courses. Like, how did she get here? But it wasn't flat. Plot twist. Great. We love that for you. Okay. So let's talk like race weekend. How were you feeling going into race day? Like, where were you at mentally, physically? Tell us everything.
Okay. So let's see. When did I leave? I think I left on Thursday, because the race was on Saturday, which was really weird and like threw me for a loop the entire weekend. But it was kind of nice though, actually. So I left on Thursday to go up there. I felt really good-ish. Like, it's always a weird mind game right before your race, because I got out of the bed that morning and I was like, oh my God, my foot hurts. My foot's broke. This is it. I can't run. I'm going to die. And then I was fine like an hour later. So I don't know. Taper plays some crazy mind games with you. But I flew up Thursday. I went up there with a friend. She actually ran her first half marathon. So we're super excited for her. But she went up there with me. Got there Thursday. Got some carbs for dinner. Went to the expo on Friday. Still felt pretty good. I will say I was really nervous because I did not sleep well, like at all. I was very, very nervous. And I posted about this on my Instagram because I was supposed to start my period literally race day. And the first day of my period is always just brutal. Like, it is straight up not a good time. So I was very, very nervous about it. And I do not sleep good the week leading up to my period. And I know that it's not the night before the race that matters. It's the week before that matters. And I was like, the week before sucks. So I was a little nervous about that, but it ended up not even being an issue. I was on my period on race day, so bet a man could man could never. So yeah, it ended up working out great, but I felt pretty good leading up to race day. So I did all my carb loading.
Yeah. How many days do you carb load and how much carbs do you eat?
3, 502.
3 and 502. And that's different for everybody. So don't take Aaron's 3-day carb load 502. Make your own.
And 502 is very like, I don't know that I actually hit 502 every single day. I think I got to like 475. That's a lot of carbs.
A lot of carbs. Do you feel like carb loading helps? Is this the first race you've done it? Tell us how it works.
It's the first race that I actually like counted how many carbs I was eating. Used to in the past, I was like, oh, like 2 bagels. That's probably a lot of carbs. And then I would eat like some pasta. And it was more like intuitive. But this time I actually like counted the numbers. And I do feel like it was really helpful just to kind of see what I was eating and to kind of keep me on track. So
throwback to when you were giggling at me because I knew how many carbs were in the crackers and the bagels. And you're like, what are you doing?
I still would giggle at you with that because I tracked it for 3 days and I still don't know, but you have it memorized.
Not anymore. I think it's left my brain.
I feel like you're going to surprise yourself when you come around again for another marathon. You're going to be like, oh.
6 crackers, 23 grams carbs.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, I digress. Carb loading, I feel like, is something that's like very underrated in the marathon distance and like the actual benefit that it can have, but that's a story for another day. Yeah. Okay, so didn't sleep great leading up to the marathon. Aunt Flo is visiting, bless her. You just keep going, you just show up. We're not fragile little flowers. We had Danielle on the podcast to chat about that. So now yeah. We're at race morning and the people want to know, did you have a time goal that morning when you were standing by your sign or when you posted the picture of the sign?
Yes, that was my time goal. That guy with the sign. That was it. That was the answer. No, 3:30 was my time goal from the start. 3:30 was like from the beginning. I think I posted a reel before marathon training even started and was like, my goal is 3:30. And I was so scared when I posted that because it is terrifying to post a goal knowing that you may not hit it and you're going to fail in front of everyone. And that's just like, whoa. Mm-hmm. But I made it a point to tell people like what my goal was leading up. Like any person that asked me, I was like, oh yeah, 3:30. Because I felt like if I said it out loud, I could speak it into existence. Mm-hmm. And it was more, I think, convincing myself that I could. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 3:30 was the goal and 3:30 we did.
Did you stay with the pace group or did you start with them? Did you start behind them? How did that work?
No, bro. I've never been in like, I guess a pace group up that high for a marathon, like that fast. They were rude. They were so rude. Like people were like aggressively trying to get their water, which also side note, Carmel only had at the beginning of the race, there was only like 4 people where you could grab water. So there was like 4 opportunities for a large group of people to grab water. So it was kind of intense.
Yikes.
So I missed the first 3 water tables because I couldn't get a water. So I got into my head a little bit there. But no, I did not stay with them the whole time because after I realized I was not going to get any water, I was like, I gotta bounce. But yeah, it was insane. It was wild. People like this one guy, my whole ass stole my water. I was like, see? That is mine, sir. And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was like, okay, but like, can I have a sip?
Yeah. Excuse me.
I don't know. It was really weird. Like,
can I have a sip?
I don't know. If I stole someone's water, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Here, would you like some? But this guy was like, oh, I'm sorry. And took a sip and then tossed it out. And I was like, rude. So,
yeah. My goodness.
Left their asses.
Okay. Well, let's break down the race a little bit. Miles 1 through 4. What was memorable? What wasn't? How did you feel?
1 through 4 was when I missed all my water stops. So I was getting a little stressed. I got a really bad calf cramp from mile 3 to mile 4. And I remember passing the photographer and I actually just got my pictures back. And I remember being like, this may be my only photo on course. Just so dramatic.
Mile 4,
22 miles to go. But then I was like, okay, just like stay calm, stay cool, stay collected. Like You're at the very beginning. Just settle in. Cramping away. I finally got some water. That was okay. I was just cruising.
Just cruising. We love that. Okay. Mile 1 through 4. Missed the water. Crampy muscles. 4 through. Let's go 10.
4 through 10 was when I really feel like I like settled in. I was like, all right. I can knock. I think I was pretty consistently like 7:58. I think I had like 3 very even miles right there. There was little kids in dinosaur costumes, which was really fun at like mile 8. So I don't know, that sticks out in my brain because they were really funny. Yeah, 4 through 10 is where I like super settled in. I was like, okay, because I break it up 10, 10, 10. So first 10 miles, middle 10 miles, and then last 10K. And so I was like, all right, make it to 10. And then box number 1 is checked. And we love checking boxes. So yeah, I felt good.
When you said 10, 10, 10, I was like, that's 30 miles. I'm confused.
Race math.
Race math. Okay. So since we're on the second set of 10, 10 through 20, how are you feeling? Where were you at mentally? And like, at what point were you like, if at all, were you like, I got BQ in the bag, like this is mine.
So I started with a 3:30 pace group. And I never turned around. I knew I was in front of the guy with the sign, and that's all I needed to do. So I was like, you just have to stay in front of the guy with the sign and you can do this. And my goal was to go out and run even splits. I know like your race in Houston made me want a negative split. It's so bad, but I was like, I just feel like this race is just a very like even split. Like we just need to even keel this one. So my goal was to even split the whole thing, and I did pretty well, but I don't think I ever actually felt like I had it in the bag. I don't think that ever crossed my mind. I think I knew that it could be taken away at any point, but I knew that I was ahead of the guy with the sign. So miles 10 through 20, I surprisingly felt really good. So I got to like mile 17 and I was like, okay, like we're still cruising. This is still good. Still sitting around like high sevens, like right at 8 minutes. It was very, very, very industrial for the entire second half of the race. So there was like no spectators whatsoever. There was no cloud coverage and it got up to like 65. So it was a little hot. I got a little sunburn. There was no fun dinosaurs the second half. So it was just me, just little old me.
Just little old me running through. Welcome to Indiana, man. Indiana. Sorry, Indiana. I'm not trying to offend you. I just like Midwest life, man. You know, there's not much happening.
There was a car on the course, and that was the most exciting thing.
10 through 20, we're in the final 10K. How are you feeling? Where are you at mentally? And I think too, something that you said is really, really important. Like it could have been taken away from you at any moment. Like the marathon owes you nothing. And it's like, the race doesn't actually start until like mile 20. So the race has now officially started at mile 20. Where are you at?
Yeah, so 20 was actually really good. And I was very shocked because I remember thinking, I was like, wow, why do I feel so okay right now? Like it's gonna hit me out of nowhere. And I know it's gonna hit me. And there was a couple bridges, which really like the hills weren't that bad, but when you get to like the later miles in a race, you're like, that feels like Mount Everest, but it's actually just like the smallest little incline. Mm-hmm. So I got to mile 22 and that's when I really was like, oh, there it is. Like this is what really hurts. And so I actually took an extra gel. I wasn't supposed to take or scheduled to take one until 24, but I was like, I have an extra. Let me just go ahead and take it just to be on the safe side. I started grabbing 2 water cups because like I said, it started getting hot. So I was like, one to drink, one to dump over my head. So I was dumping water all over me, trying to stay cool. And I actually walked. I walked for 10 seconds. I was like, you're allowed to take a break. And so I stopped for 10 seconds. Looking back, I don't know that it was a good idea because I actually felt how bad my legs hurt. I think it was a bad idea, but I kept going and I made it. So I allowed myself those 10 seconds to just like kind of throw myself a pity party. And then I was like, but you got to keep fucking going. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the guy with the sign hadn't passed me. So I was like, all right, you're still in this. And then at one point, probably like mile 23 and a half, right before 24, we do a hairpin turn and hop back on like a little nature trail. And I remember like coming up this little bridge and I saw the guy with a sign and I was like, oh my God, you're so close. And I was just like, all right, just stay in front of him. And so I was like, two more miles. You just got to stay in front of him. And then I made it to mile 26 and my friend and her husband were there and he's like sprinting out the side. He's like, go get it, like yelling. And she's over there screaming. And I was like, trying not to cry because I knew that the guy with the sign hadn't passed me. And then I saw my husband and he was over there screaming and he sprinted down the entire last stretch, like along, like in the crowd. Everyone's like staring at him. And I just remember like, I thought I was hauling ass and looking at my time. It was a 7:11 pace, which is still very fast. But like, I thought I was like 5 minute pace. I was flying. I wasn't moving. So I crossed the finish line and I knew the guy with the sign hadn't passed me, but I also remember him saying that to be like, he had to be within 1 minute either way of 3:30. So then I got to thinking and I was like, crap, I don't know what time I started because I didn't look at the clock. So I didn't know like whatever math when a refinish race is not doable. So I was like, I knew I'd might not have made it because if he ran slower then he was 3:31, so I might not have qualified for Boston, right? So I find my husband and I'm like sobbing because it was still a huge PR, and then I check my result and it said DNF and I was like, oh my God. And I was about ready to flip a table. I was so angry. So I stormed over to the results table and I was like, I need to speak to someone. And luckily, no one came over there because I probably would have cursed them out. I was so angry. So then I went and laid down on the grass for a second because there was nobody to talk to. I was just being a complete Karen about it. And then I searched my result again and it finally popped up. It was 3:29:22. And I was like, ah!
What a rollercoaster of emotions.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, dude, when I saw that DNF, I was like, no.
Okay, so you see the results. We see 3:29:32 on the phone. It's in real life. Describe the feeling of like, holy shit, I did that.
I don't know that there's like a word to describe it. This surprises no one, but I just like sobbed. Like it was 6 years. Like I worked for this for 6 years. And I was like, I just thinking back to all the early mornings and the late nights at the gym and the long runs and the canceled plans and me not hanging out with friends because I had to do a run or I knew I was going to be busy or I knew I was going to be tired. And it was like, it wasn't for nothing. Like it was for something. And I fucking did it. So it's just, I don't know. It's a really cool feeling.
You're going to make me cry. I'm like waiting for you to start crying right now.
I've already started. It's okay.
Like, I can see your eyes getting like watery. It's coming. It's coming. But I think like you really knelt there. Like it's like a lot of times we call it a sacrifice, but it's like, and it's an investment into your future goals and that future version of you. And it's like, you never know how proud you're going to make that finish line version of yourself by showing up when you don't want to, when it's late, when you're tired, when you're feeling discouraged, when you're doubting yourself. It's like, that's where the BQs happen. That's where the PRs happen, is like in those mundane, I don't want to show up moments. And it's like, it's not just a one-off run. It's like accumulation of a ton of different moments and runs and races where you show up for yourself, man. And like, it's just so full circle. And it's been so cool to like watch you chase this goal with so much drive. And, you know, you could tell that you were just like hungry for it and you wanted it. And it was funny. I was like having a conversation with somebody before, like, well, do you think she's going to? I was like, fuck yeah. Like, of course. Like, it wasn't even a question. And I think when you carry that level of like authority and certainty in you and your goals, that like other people are like, of course she's got it. Like, there's not, you know, and also like race day owes you nothing. But when you have the drive and the training cycle to back it up, it's like magic happens, man. So you get to ring the little BQ bell. How did it feel?
Oh my gosh. That thing was so loud. I feel like everyone turned and looked at me and I was like, yeah, I don't know. It's just thinking back on it, I'm just so proud of myself because I never quit. I think that's like getting the BQ was a great byproduct and it was really cool. And I'm so happy to say that like I can finally put it on my Instagram bio that I've qualified for Boston. But like I didn't quit, you know, even when I ran New York in almost 5 hours, like I never quit. And I feel like, I don't know, I had people that were like, oh, you're a long ways away. And it's like, yeah, I know I am. Thank you. Like, but I still made it, you know. Mm-hmm. I kept going.
Well, and I think too, like what you just said, like it's about the BQ and it's not about the BQ at all. Like while that's mm-hmm. awesome, that's a byproduct. It's actually about, you know, believing in yourself and not listening to the haters and the people that told you were too far away and your ego who said you were too far away and just like showing up and getting after it anyways. Yeah. Okay. So now it's Marathon Monday, the time we're recording this. And I didn't make the correlation until the week of, and I was like, okay, how cool that the universe plotted Erin was going to run this marathon the same weekend that everybody's in Boston getting ready to run the Boston Marathon when like your goal was a BQ. I just felt like it was too like, what's that word? Serendipitous?
Serendipitous.
Is that it? Is that the word? Serendipitous. Can you spell it for me? No, I'm just kidding.
Cannot.
Okay, so you watched Marathon Monday today. I'm sure. I'm just assuming you did. You yeah. at least were like plugging in and following along. How did it feel to know that like you qualified?
I sobbed. Surprises sure. no one. Yeah. It was so cool to watch the women go off. And I was like, wow, I have the potential to be there next year. Like I could do it, you know. I did that. And then like all the announcers just kept talking about how hard it is to qualify for Boston and how not everyone qualifies for Boston. And I was like, but I did. Like I did that. So it was a very full circle moment, which I didn't plan for my race to fall on this weekend either. So I do feel like it was kind of cool. Yeah. That it did.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and too, I think, you know, as new runners, as we have, you know, like I feel as if almost runner at some point in their running journey has the goal to BQ, whether they follow through with it or not, you know. And so it's like, I'm sure a 4:30 version of you put these people at Boston on a pedestal, like I could never be there. I mean, you had the mindset of like one day, but we put them on a pedestal and it's like, they're on a level playing field now, my friend.
Yeah.
Like you are there. And also like work to be done. Even literally the day after the marathon, you're like, okay, I'm ready to do it again, but do it better.
Yeah, like, I know. It's the most Erin
comment ever. So let's talk a little bit about the come down. What are you going to be focusing on? What's next for you in your racing world or in your training world?
Yeah. That's been a question that I feel like I've been asked more than I thought I would be asked. Like, 2 days after
my race. Let's just have a moment.
Yeah, also, like, I don't want the moment. Like, I don't know. Ask me what's next. So I know that the buffer time for Boston is always a big to-do and a big talk. I know that I only have a 48-second buffer. 48 second. I don't have a large buffer, whatever that math is. So the chances of me running Boston next year, I know are slim, and that's okay. Like I said, it's about Boston and it's not about Boston. Like 3:30 was the time goal. I did 3:30. I qualified for my age group. Mm-hmm. Whatever else happens is not in my control. So next goal is to see what the cutoff time is, see if I'm going to be running Boston in April. But for now, over the summer, I'm just going to be focusing on speed work again. So that 5K distance, I'll be with you in Chicago whenever you crush your marathon. Mm-hmm. And I'll run the Chicago 5K again and really focus on strength again and then potentially run a late 2024 marathon or early 2025 marathon, pending the Boston situation, and hopefully run even faster.
Heck yeah. And I think you can probably relate to this too. Like after Houston, it was like after like achieving such a massive PR, and it's like, it would be really easy to be like, okay, let me go sign up for another race. But I think it like is like a level of maturity as a marathoner to be able to be like, yeah, I just did that. And I know that I could do it better and I could do it faster, but I'm going to be patient and waiting for that. And I think that that can be really hard sometimes. Like right after Houston, I was like, oh, like I could go sign up for another like spring race or like a summer race or whatever. And it's like, but just find joy in the off season, because now that you've experienced what it's like to have those gains in the off season, it's like, I actually crave it. Like, I'm like, give me some time off, baby. Like, let me get into the gym and lift that heavy stuff and not have to have be so regimented in like my running and all of the things. So there's a time and place for both, and you can do both.
Yeah. I do love a good off season. Like I'm very excited about it. And like you said, like people ask me, they're like, oh, well, why don't you go try and run like a marathon before you have to submit your time and get more of a buffer? And I'm like, that actually sounds like my worst nightmare. Like that sounds like something I would never want to do, because that's such a quick turnaround. And thinking about running a marathon again in 3 months sounds miserable. Mm-hmm. Boston will always be there, and I can – It's not like I'm going to be a potato and be like, I don't care about getting faster. Like right. 3:30 was never the end goal, you know? So it'll be there. I'll get faster eventually.
I love that. I'm so proud of you. Okay. This is like getting really, really long, but we love Coach Ariam, so we're going to keep talking to her. We have a couple like rapid fire questions from the people, from the athletes, from the gram.
Athlete questions always make me so nervous.
20 seconds or less. Answer these.
Oh God. Okay. Okay.
What was the best or funniest race sign along the course?
I'm going to be honest with you. I read zero signs.
It was the dinosaurs. Got it.
Dinosaurs.
What did you eat before the race?
A bagel with peanut butter and banana and a bottle of Morton carbs.
Carbs. Lots of carbs. We love the carbs. Classic. Carbs. What did you eat after the race?
Cheeseburger.
Not surprised. Tell us about the bandit bra. Is it truly magical?
Was that your question?
No, I have the bandit bra. I know it's magical.
I do love the bandit bra. It is my favorite sports bra. It has so many pockets. It has a spot for your phone. It's easy to get your phone out mid-race and put it back. It's not like you're trying to reach to put it back in your pocket. This is not sponsored by Bandit. but honestly, like pocketed sports bras are a game changer.
Yes, for sure. If we could get those with like the Strides for Strength logo on them,
dude.
I would die. I would keel over. Okay. Yeah. You can take a little bit more than 20 seconds to answer this one, cause it's a little bit more intricate, but kind of not. What was your fueling strategy during the race?
I start off with a Ucan. Before the race, like literally right before the gun goes off, I take a Ucan. And then every 4 miles I take a Morton gel, and I try and alternate between regular and caffeine. I usually stop the caffeine probably like mile 18, cause it doesn't really benefit you at that point. Like it's not going to help you after that. And then I always have 2 extra just in case I need more. Because usually you can feel it before you get to that point where you're like, oh, I'm depleted. Like you can tell you're getting to that point. So I have a couple extra. And I carry electrolytes in my pocket, especially because it was a little bit warmer than I had trained because I trained over the winter. And then I just got water at every single water station that I could get water at without having to fight someone. So, yeah.
Love that for you. How was the course? Was it a point-to-point race or an out-and-back race?
It was a figure eight.
Oh, so none of the above.
Plot twist. So it was kind of like a butterfly, I guess, is another way to describe it. But like the first loop was the half, and then we ran through the opposite side of the finish line. So like the half finished, and we ran on the other side, which also is a really big mind F, because I was like, oop, what if I just tripped and fell in the finish chute for the half marathon? Like I could just quit. And then we did like another little circle and then came back and finished.
Interesting. Would you recommend the race to somebody?
It, Yes and no. It depends on what you need. If you need any sort of like crowd support, no, because it was non-existent. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for completely like pancake flat, no, because it was rolling hills. If you like rolling hills and you're very self-motivated, then yeah, it's your race, like sold. But if that's not your jam, then no.
Right on. You know, it's like every race has its own unique quirks. You got to find what, yeah, like, what like scratches the edge. Like, I love Houston. I think I could run Houston every single year.
Yeah, I truly enjoy Houston too. I did like running a smaller race, I will say. It was really nice. Like the expo, I think there was probably like 100 people in there getting their bib at a time.
Nice.
And then lining up, I was able to hop out right at the start line. So.
Heck yeah. Okay. Last question. What are you going to be doing as you are resting post-race? Like, what does your post-race recovery period look like?
I'm going to Spain. I'm going to Disney World. No, it's mine and my husband's 5-year wedding anniversary. So we are going to Spain to celebrate. So I'll be gone for 2 weeks and then I'll come back and start running again.
This girl, what can she do? Runs a marathon, qualifies for Boston, going to Spain and then coming back and hosting our retreat.
I like to stay busy, man.
And she just started a new job. So like, you know, hair. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what I really loved, I like the morning that you were running your race, I like was like, damn, I don't want to run today. And then I was like, Erin just ran a BQ. I can go out and do my workout that I'm supposed to be doing. But I was like on my run and I was like, it gets to be this good. Like you get to feel this strong and healthy and happy and like crush your training cycle and crush your training runs and not bonk and hit the wall during the marathon. Like, it's just like when all the pieces finally come together, you're like, damn, this is cool.
Try again. So it's fine. I'm fine.
I'm fine. Everything's fine. Okay. Well, we're so proud of you. The group chat was group chat and post race, which was really cool. Like I said, like as you as a coach find your edge, you then get to go pour that into our community at Strides for Strength and the athletes, all the things, which is just like full circle, man. You think back to the little 4:32.2 run in there and she would never.
Oh my God. That 2:2 though. I need to frame that.
Okay, pal. Well, thank you for recapping. This was a really long one, but I know that everybody's going to find so much value in just your journey and you showing up, not giving up, not quitting. I'm so proud of you.
Thanks, pal.
We know running is more fun with community and we all need more people in our lives to share that crazy kind of love for everything on the run and beyond.
If you have a running bestie who you think would love this episode and our Strides for Strength community, send this episode and follow us on Instagram @StridesForStrength. Until next time, friend, keep working towards a stronger you.